his mind, I can try and find a replacement for him who is appropriately knowledgeable as well.
Yeah, I'd really appreciate that. That's great.
Okay, that's good.
I was really hoping to have more feedback on this. So anyone who's interested, and Mo, if you wanna talk offline about that, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. I'll give you a call. We'll talk some more. No problem.
Okay. Thanks, Mo.
All right. So let's then now go ahead and get a motion to accept the interim draft report assessing the need to modernize water penetration resistance test procedures by name. For a motion in a second.
Vince has motion to accept the draft report. Assistant.
Michael second.
Mike Savage.
All right, we have a motion second. Chairman Schott, go ahead. Jim, are you there? Okay, so we have a motion and a second.
I was on mute, sorry. Okay, yeah, motion made and seconded for acceptance of the interim report for assessing the need to modernize water penetration resistance and test procedures. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. Thank you.
Great. Yep. So our third report, our final report before we get into our next agenda item, is establishing inspection periods and preliminary recommendations for preventive measures for mid-rise buildings near coastal and inland South Florida environments. And I hope I do a decent job of this, and that would be presented from FIU by Adarat Aziza Namni.
You did great. You did great.
Great. And Mo, let Mo do a little preliminary, and then we'll turn it over to you.
This is Mo Madani again. I think in terms of this project, again, this is one of those projects that was approved for this fiscal year. And the purpose of it is to establish inspection mainly period based on carbonation of concrete, and ultimately to provide measures for preventive measures. So, all right. Go ahead.
All right. If I may share my screen, that would be great. I also have Dr. Kingsley Lau, so both of us are working on this project.
Okay, great.
All right, fantastic. Yeah, seem like it. I can get it. Oh, let's see. There we go. All right. I think you see my screen. Am I right?
Yes, we do.
Okay, fantastic. All right. First of all, thanks for the opportunity to provide you with the progress that we have made in this project. So just to get us on the same page, I just put the project objectives in a very simple term. I mean, more kind of summarized it, but really, the main objective is to establish the time that corrosion at the steel level will be initiated because of the CO2 ingress or carbonation-induced corrosion, basically. And also, we are looking at investigate the merits of protecting and upgrading existing columns, so needing repairs with the UHPC. So and we are also taking advantage of some of our other projects ongoing, and then also compare the time to carbon-induced corrosion of regular concrete column to that of the UHPC. So let me elaborate here. So if you look at the, I want to show a few slides, and then Dr. Kingsley Lau is going to go into the various specific aspects of the establishing the inspection cycles based on the carbonation-induced corrosion. One of the objective, of course, is to, like Mo said, is to kind of look at the approaches that we can be proactive and protect or even prevent the further corrosion taking place. This slide basically shows some of the methods that if you have a columns in the building that needs to be retrofitted, but the same thing can be used for the protection too. And I can tell you in the South Florida, we do have quite a number of them. So what we have done is we have established, actually talking, we have two professor of practice in our department that is also advising us to one of them being a designer of the John Hancock building in his late 80s and another one who is also a designer of high-rise buildings. So by banging our heads together, we came up with the ways of saying that, okay, if I have a column in a building and I want to retrofit, how can I do that? So we have developed a scheme for that without interrupting the occupancy too much. We have built now four concrete columns. One of them is a base. So this one is like, for example, a 12 by 12 inch column. And we tried to, and all four of them, the core is a 12 by 12 inch. The idea is that this one represents, you have a column, you want to protect it, you want to upgrade it, you want to do something, you want to prevent the corrosion, whatever. We try to use, when we cast the core, which is just a normal strip concrete, we ordered that, we said that we want the lowest quality concrete that we can get. I think we are about the 4,000 PSI. It's very difficult, you know, nowadays to get something that structural grade and then get a 4,000 PSI. But anyway, so we casted four columns. This is just what you see in the base is basically is a way of trying to be able to test these columns. And I'll show you how we're going to test them. The testing on this column includes devices. Dr. Kingsley is going to explain, trying to pass a CO2 at the pressure, trying to see that how the carbonation-induced corrosion take place before the testing. And then after this test on these columns, we are going to be, you'll see that we have some extra reinforcement here. These are number 7 bars at each corner. These are meant to be, this is a base reference column that is not going to be strengthened, but all other three are going to be strengthened. One of them is going to be wrapped with a normal strength concrete, and two of them are going to be wrapped with the ultra performance concrete. So these additional reinforcement that you see here are these basically representing these reinforcements. So you have a column, you want to strengthen it, you add some additional reinforcement at the four corner, and then you cast around that normal strength concrete or ultra high performance concrete. So before doing that, of course, like I said, this one is a base without a retrofit, so we're going to test this one to establish the, try to see what the performance of the column is without the strengthening, and then one of them is going to be wrapped with the normal strength concrete, try to see how much the normal strength concrete will add to the strength and also ability to resist the carbonation induced corrosion. So we're going to run these tests after the wrapping these things with the normal strength concrete or ultra high performance concrete. So that will tell us how much ultra high performance concrete can help to reduce the future corrosion. My own feeling, if you want to know, I think ultra high performance concrete wrapping a column with a 1 inch, 1.5 inch ultra high performance concrete is going to almost prevent it completely, because there is a test that's called the rapid chloride permeability test, RCP. The RCP numbers, the lower it is, the better it is. The RCP number for normal strength concrete is around probably 2, 3, 4,000 Coulomb. for ultra-performance concrete is below 50. So for the future, preventing the future corrosion and all that, I think we are going to see ultra-performance concrete is really advantageous. When we try to get to the point that we are going to be testing these columns, I will share it with Mo Madani. Maybe we can have online, maybe camera, so those of you who are interested, you can take a look at it. I also put over here, I will share these PowerPoints with Mo. He can send it to you. Those of you who are interested what this ultra-performance concrete is, and this is just, if you want to make your own homemade UHPC, here's the recipe. So these are the, basically the, this is the, this right here is a cross-section of that base. This right here, what you see on the left-hand side, is the, this column right here. And then one of them is going to be wrapped with the normal strength concrete. And the two of them are going to be wrapped with the ultra-performance concrete. In addition to that additional longitudinal reinforcement that you saw, they're going to put some transverse reinforcement too in there. So these, we're going to run this accelerated carbonation-induced corrosion test. Dr. Lau is going to discuss that.
Okay, hello, everybody. So the intent of the project is to assess what is the risk for carbonation-induced corrosion for our structural systems, reinforced concrete. We plan to do these large-scale testing with these large-scale columns and also some small-scale testing to look at material characteristics of concrete that we may expect to see. And so in these large-scale columns, we introduce corrosion probes, sensors essentially, and they're embedded inside. We measure the initial corrosion rate just to get a baseline reading. You can see this chamber in these pictures. You see the mouse moving. We developed these carbonation chambers connected to a high-purity CO2 chamber, put a little pressure just to speed up the testing a little bit. Carbonation typically is a fairly slow process. Just to get the work done a little bit faster, we have it pressurized at 100% concentration. And so with time, we'll monitor the penetration of the CO2 diffusing through the concrete cover. Once it reaches the steel probe, the sensor, it will start to activate. We're going to measure that corrosion by electrochemical techniques, including the measuring the open circuit potential and using polarization resistance measurements to measure the corrosion rate. So with that, we can get the time to which corrosion can occur. And after that, as Dr. Azizi Mini said, we were very much interested in looking at how UHPC can be used to mitigate corrosion. So after the repair of the concrete with the concrete wrap and UHPC cover, we'll come back and measure again what is the corrosion rate that can develop in the substrate concrete. And so talking about identifying inspection periods, we have to understand how corrosion works, and in particular carbonation-induced corrosion. So typically corrosion, the surface life of a structure due to corrosion can be broken up into two phases. One is called the initiation phase, and one is called the propagation phase. So in terms of carbonation-induced corrosion, the initiation time is the time it takes for the CO2 to penetrate through the concrete to go through the concrete clear cover and reach the steel surface. And this expression down here gives you an idea how that depth of carbonation is related to time. There is a material and exposure environment factor, again, related to what materials you have, the mix design, and their exposure conditions. So after corrosion initiates, active corrosion starts, and it continues at a certain corrosion rate, such that the steel corrodes, creates corrosion products, and starts causing damage to the structure itself, either in form of cracks, delamination, and spalls. So one of the most important environmental factors for us is trying to identify what is the role of sheltering of the concrete, what is the role of moisture, internal moisture content, because this one basic parameter can affect both initiation time and propagation time inversely. For example, if you're in a dry environment, you can find that carbonation can diffuse very, very quickly. And so you can have a very, very short initiation time. But if you don't have a lot of moisture internally within the concrete pore water system, it's not enough moisture to support the electrochemical cells, the corrosion cells, to have corrosion. So your propagation time may be extended. Vice versa, if you were to have a wet environment, you may have much longer initiation time. But once the carbonation does diffuse to that wet concrete and causes corrosion to start, you may have a very fast propagation time. So if you want to identify times of inspection, it's important to identify what are the environmental conditions that the concrete will see. This will be very different from an area that's shaded or continuously being wet compared to a concrete that's in an open area and continuously drying. Not only that, the wet and drying process is even more aggressive because it gives you the worst of both worlds, where you can, in dry periods, you allow fast CO2 penetration, but in wetting periods, it allows that corrosion cell to develop. And so we have the small-scale experiments and large-scale experiments to really identify what is the role of different concretes. We're also looking at different types of aggregates, and importantly, what is the effect of that internal moisture condition, really to get a good idea of when is it really appropriate to identify when corrosion starts. A lot of people, especially in the bridge community, when we talk about chlorides, are very much interested in initiation time. But with carbonation-induced corrosion, the amount of carbonation that can occur can vary very differently by moisture content. And so, again, the concrete mix is very important. I have in this slide some examples of concretes used in Florida bridges. And so the bridge community has been very attuned to having high-quality concretes. And so on the graph on the right-hand side, you can see several bridges that were built in Florida, and this value called the diffusivity values. And it's essentially an indicator of how permeable the concrete is. So the bigger the value, the more permeable it is, the smaller the value, the less permeable it is. So this is some of our highest performing concretes in our bridges in Florida. And you can notice in terms of penetration of chloride ions, a change in the order of diffusivity can have a dramatic increase of ion interaction and diffusion to the system. So obviously having concrete that has a much lower diffusivity will allow less permeation of the species that can diffuse to the system. So this is important, especially looking into newer technologies and getting to UHPC, which is getting a lot of traction recently. So the concrete may be very good and can be beneficial, but sometimes you may have cracks in the system. So this example of a bridge here, it had high-performance concrete, but it had local these small, thin cracks, but happened to be very deep, thin cracks. And so cores were taken in the system and sprayed with a pH indicator. When you see this pink color, the pH indicator is indicating that the concrete didn't carbonate, which means the pH didn't change. But you can see here through these thin cracks that the carbonation may be fast through the system. So looking at materials such as UHPC may be beneficial. So there are many things that are important, the cement content, the composition, the type of concrete, UHPC for example, how deep the cover may be. Importantly for us is how much internal moisture is inside the concrete, the effect of wet and drying cycling, and how it affects how oxygen can be available. And oxygen really is the driving force that causes the corrosion system, and also the importance of having dislocalized cracks in the system. So structures can have a very, very different amount of severity in terms of corrosion. The magnitude of order for carbonation-induced corrosion can be different by a magnitude of 4. So it can be very different. A lot of the exposure and material characteristics have major effects on how this occurs. So in our testing, we're trying to get a better grasp of how that occurs and to try to provide better recommendations for our buildings and our structures. So as Dr. Zizimi talked already, we have those large-scale testing on those columns in our system. That's part of Task 1 and 2. Those columns have been built already, again, using Class 2 concrete with poor quality, just to get an idea of what happens to poor quality concrete that may be susceptible to damage and need repair. As mentioned before, we have these corrosion probes, these sensors that are embedded inside a concrete system. We attach the carbonation chamber again. That's right. So Dr. Zizimi brought up that these probes were set inside the formwork of the concrete. So they're embedded inside. Each sensor, two per column, has two probes. And so one is going to be at a half-inch depth, and one is about 1.5-inch depth, just so we have some redundancy in our measurements and look at the depth of penetration as well. We developed these chambers to help try to accelerate the carbonation process. Again, we have a high purity CO2, about 99.9%, and we're increasing the pressure, again, just to help us get the rate of carbonation faster, because, again, carbonation typically is a slower process, and to get the work done on time, we're trying to do these accelerated means. There's some testing with you. As I mentioned before, we'll look at carbonation in terms of electrochemical testing, looking at the open circuit potential, and a polarization resistance by an LPR test method. And so we were looking at several small-scale tests on samples, really, so we can really differentiate concrete type, mixed design, and moisture environments. So we cast several 2-inch, 4-inch diameter concrete cylinders. Mixed design has a water sum ratio ranging from 0.5 to 0.6. We have different sized limestone. We have number 5-7 and number 8-9, just really to try to differentiate how fast the CO2 can penetrate, looking at different sizes of the rock itself. And we condition after 20 days of curing. We did additional conditioning of these concrete core cylinders. We have several kept in a dry condition at about 20% relative humidity, some in 75%, some at 95%, and some immersed in water. And so the two graphs shows indication of mass change and, importantly, an electrical characteristic called resistivity. And so the mass change just indicates how much water is being gained or how much water is being lost in the system. And we want to wait and see, just to reach some terminal value where we can identify that the internal moisture of the concrete reached near terminal value, so we can start to the accelerated carbonation test. And also the resistivity is another indicator of permeability and moisture content. We monitor them, and they're now starting to reach terminal values. We're planning to now take those cores that have set these terminal internal moisture contents, and we'll start our accelerated carbonation test and identify how much the CO2 can penetrate. So we'll expose them again to that 100% CO2 at higher pressures. We'll monitor them about every week. We'll cut some open and spread them with the pH indicator of phenethylamine just to indicate the amount of CO2 penetration. We'll continue to do so just so we can identify again the rate at which CO2 can penetrate these concretes with different mix designs and different internal moisture contents. We'll start looking at some electrochemical tests to identify the rate of corrosion. As I mentioned before, the service life is both the initiation phase and the propagation phase. Initiation phase is how fast CO2 can penetrate. Propagation phase is dominated by what is the speed, what is the rate at which steel corrosion occurs. And so those tests are on the way. While we're doing it, we're doing a lot of additional testing really just to get good characteristics of the concrete, especially in the different moisture conditions. We're looking at some electrical characteristics of the concrete, including the concrete resistivity and the concrete capacitance. So real quickly, just not to go into the weeds too much, the electrical behavior of concrete can be described by an equivalent electrical circuit. So anywhere you have ionic path, such as through the pore structure of the concrete or through your aggregates, you have some type of resistance related to the path which water can flow. And you also have this dielectric condition that's kind of represented by capacitance, and this represents just the bulk material itself. So you can measure electrochemically on these characteristics, and it will give you indication of how the cement paste is behaving, how well it's hydrated, and probably what is the moisture content. And so we can see here several of our cylinder samples. We've tested this. We measured resistivity of time and capacitance and different water cement ratio and moisture contents and rock type. We're getting good correlation. So we plan again to do the accelerated carbonation test, identify how much the carbonation comes in. Importantly, when it does form, when it forms these calcium carbonate as a byproduct, what does it do to the cement structure itself, the microstructure? Does it start degrading the CSH gel, the hydrates that makes up the concrete material? It starts consuming porlinite and the CSH. That should affect the dielectric condition, the cement characteristics, and the damage we can also characterize by these electrical means. We're also looking at characterizing these concretes by acoustic testing. The acoustic testing, again, identifies how the cement paste may be degraded due to the carbonation process as the CO2 consumes the porlandite and some of the gel paste of the concrete. So this testing serves for us as a baseline of what happens, what is the concrete like when it's hydrated and different internal moisture contents. We did some initial baseline testing looking at its electrical characteristics and its acoustic characteristics. We're going to use that again and compare them to additional testing that is being developed in-house at FIU. So this testing is an in-situ testing that is right now being aimed at being used on-site in-situ for large-scale structures. The idea is to identify how the concrete may be damaged due to many different parameters, including carbonation-induced corrosion. So I'll pass it to Dr. Zizanimini.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Kingsley. So along with all these tests that Kingsley is doing, trying to understand the rate and how the CO2 causes the corrosion in the reinforcing bars that embedded in the let's say structures like columns and so on. We are also going to do this particular test that we developed at FIU. I think I showed you what it is. And the reason we want to do that is because you can, let's say you have a column, and they may have a, let's say, for example, you want to understand its behavior or whatever. You can basically mount a device that we are actually modifying for the field application, and you can mount it, and then we can apply water at a pressure of about 200 psi, and we monitor the drop in the pressure versus the time. And that will tell us, by looking at that, the quality of the concrete. And we are trying to relate that to some of the CO2-induced corrosion, if we can. So this is one additional test that we're going to do for durability. There is a separate activity that we have. We are trying to relate the results of this particular test to other durability tests that takes a very long time, such as rapid chloride permeability test. So on the research activities that has been completed, basically we have completed the construction of the columns without the retrofit. We have installed the corrosion sensors inside of it. We have some baseline testing of the corrosion sensors. We have smaller scale specimens that have been exposed to different relative humidity, and they've been saturated. Now it's ready to do the CO2 test, trying to see CO2 ingress into these samples by breaking them and then studying them. And we have also done some additional the baseline mass electrical, other typical tests that we do in the area of the corrosion. So those are done. So what currently are we doing, and which is really going to be the next one, we're going to continue this testing these columns before we wrap it with the normal strength concrete or UHPC, and study how the carbonation induced corrosion is behaving, and then we're going to repeat the same thing after we wrap them with the normal strength concrete and the UHPC. So hopefully that will show what is the effective of being a proactive, you know, because not only is wrapping these things, I think, with the UHPC instead of the normal strength concrete is going to prevent the corrosion, but it's going to strengthen it. And there are many of these columns in the high-rise building that needs to be strengthened. We're going to try to really bring everything, the smaller scale testing, this rapid testing, and then kind of everything relate together so that we can have it basically in our toolbox, different tools that we can assess these columns, be proactive, be protective, and so on. And then, of course, we are going to be testing these columns under the axial load that represents the dead load that's already there because of the weight of the structures. And then we're going to apply this lateral load that represents the, for example, let's say wind load and so on. And after the, actually, interestingly, after the test is over, now these specimens are going to crack up. There's going to be lots of cracks. And we're going to run these tests that you see down here again, just to try to see that if you have a cracks, what happens, basically, in the structure. So we're going to, now, I put this, this is not part of this project, but I put this over here just to show you that we are going to be doing one additional test, okay, on these columns, if we can. I'm not sure if there is a method, I can tell you this much. I have worked in this area for more than, 20-25 years. The best method to detect the corrosion in steel reinforcement that is not visible. You cannot see it with the naked eyes. And it's embedded in the concrete. It's a magnetic flux leakage method. And what it is, in a very simple term, if I put a magnet on a steel reinforcement, and I just pass it along the length of the reinforcing bars, I'm going to get some kind of a, like an airflow, let's say, magnetic flux, the magnetics flow. It's like an airflow. And when that airflow, when you get to a point where the reinforcement is not there, has become an iron oxide and there's a corrosion, that airflow is going to be disrupted. So we have a sensor that we can sense it, the interruption to that airflow or the magnetic flow, magnetic flux. And by there, with the, from the signal, we can say where the corrosion is. We have very successfully applied this. We have brought segments, very large segments of the bridge. In the bridge area, we have applied it very successfully. And on these kind of bridges, this kind of signal that you see like a sinusoidal, that tells us where it is. This was a control test, actually. This was a, we had these, we brought these segments, good for us, but unfortunate for the real bridge. There were a couple of ducts that somebody forgot to grout, so it was empty. So we put some steel with a known corrosion, with all section loss to represent the corrosion. And we were able to, we are able very clearly to do that. We have also applied this to a, to bridge structures in the Florida, very successfully trying to say where the, there might be corrosion, and the results match the results of the borescope where you drill actually visually you see it. So anyway, that's where we are at, and I want to leave it on this slide. So that's where we is the status of our project right now. So over the, we are on a schedule. I mean, we've added a couple of additional non-destructive testing that we like to do, kind of tie things together. But I think I'm hoping that all this structural testing should be finished. We have some, believe it or not, to get the concrete, to cast the normal strength concrete, we have to stay in line for a month and a half. And which is, I think, because of the pandemic and things like that. But I think we are still, even on that, we are on the schedule. So anyway, hopefully, I mean, this gives you some idea what this project is. And I think, I really think that this thing is going to have lots of good results that the consultant and the industry can use to address, in addition to the this, or providing additional data point for the inspection cycles. But I think it's gonna provide some really good information what we should be doing with the, some of these columns. I can share one story with you. I gave it presentation more than a year ago to Miami Chamber of Commerce, and there was a contractor that was in the audience, and he approached me and he said, you know, Dr. Adizio, I have one column that the own, I have $250,000 to retrofit that column. And I said, why don't you use maybe something like a UHPC or something? And you can do it a fraction of the cost of that, maybe $10,000, $20,000. And he wasn't aware of it. So I think it's gonna provide quite a bit of help. So with that, I'll stop. And any questions, we'll be glad to myself and Dr. Law to answer.
Okay, thank you for your presentation. Committee members, any questions or comments on the interim report?
Sergio.
Go ahead, Sergio.
Good afternoon, Professor, and thank you for that presentation. Very, very interesting information and very important to our area. I just have one kind of scenario, and it goes towards the heart of basically the our recertification law that's going. Given two buildings that are built the same, concrete cover, same concrete strength, same wet wet cycles. One being located adjacent to a water body, salt water body, the other one located inward. Would the salt environment alone cause an accelerated carbonation of concrete?
I'll take it. So the salt itself is corrosive. So any structures that's in a marine environment, you can have chloride-induced corrosion. So that's given. And chloride-induced corrosion is very, very aggressive. If you have chloride-induced corrosion with carbonation, you're just making that much worse. So what happens with chloride ions, the salt, when it gets to the steel surface at a sufficient level, it enables to start corrosion. It actually activates corrosion. But the pH is still pretty high, around 12 or so. And so that itself is aggressive. When you carbonate concrete, you acidify the concrete itself. So not only do you have an attack of the steel corroding because of the passivation because of the salt, you now have the steel in a more neutral to acidic environment with the chloride-induced corrosion. So having chloride and carbonation is like a double whammy. It'll be worse.
Let me add, I sometimes try to kind of tease my corrosion colleagues. We hang our hat on some of these equations that predicts the corrosion initiation, like solution to the Fick second law and all that. And my feeling is that if you look at those things, I think it gives you a data point to understand basically what the mechanism is and how things work. In my opinion, I think if you are in the environment that you think that it's going to be corrosive, I mean, you're going to have a chloride-induced corrosion or carbonation-induced corrosion, let's say, I think we have to be proactive. I think being proactive is much better than trying to predict. It's like these folks that they work in the hurricane area, they predict the sea level rise is going to be 2 inches high, 3 inches high. We have to adapt ourselves to this situation. And I think in this situation, rather than trying to predict things, I think we need to understand, of course, but I think being proactive and then rapid with it, some layer of, in my opinion, on some of these basements that we know that there's going to be flooding and all that, you got to rapid with the UHPC. And then you don't have to think about it because it actually chokes the system. The Kingsley has actually some test data that shows that even if you have an ongoing corrosion in a column, if you wrap it with the UHPC, you choke the system. And that prevents. So, anyway.
So, all right. Any other questions or comments, committee members? All right, great. If we could then, by name, have a motion and a second.
Jeff, I have a question. I'm sorry. Jeff, I have a question very quickly.
Go ahead, Mom.
Yeah. This is Mom and Johnny. Let me ask you something here. I'm in my hand is ACI 318. And when I go to Chapter 19, it does talk about mainly protection of steel from corrosion, and it gives you a specific exposure category. And it says really Category C, it addresses really when you expose the concrete and the steel to a salt environment. Did you look at that, and how is really your work complement or confirm what's going on? Are we having a problem with the design? Are we designing wrong?
Let me answer that. I'm going to let Kingsley to chime in. Some of these developments with respect to the UHPC and all that are new. So it's not at the ACI building code. The 318 building code, I mean, it's going to take several years before it gets there. There are some additional documents that are becoming available from the Federal Highway Administration and the PCI that elaborates on the material and the characteristics. So it's not really in the ACI 318 building code yet, the protection that you get out of the UHPC. There was another question along the line of what you're asking. Some structural engineer actually asked, but the ACI building code doesn't allow to use the UHPC. ACI building code actually allows. There is no limitation on the strength of the concrete that you can use. I mean, these are the 21 KSI concrete. There is no limitations. There are some limitations in design provisions, like, for example, when you calculate the strength, you cannot take advantage of more than for the tension development lab, for 10,000 PSI, or square root of a prime, 100 PSI. So, but you want to chime in?
Sure. So, like, a document like ACI 318, they're really addressing, like, well-established, easy-to-observe phenomena. So chlorine use corrosion is very, very aggressive. And you have, if you have very poor quality concrete and exposed to a marine environment, you have very early damage. An example I'll give, the bridges in the Florida Keys, they were damaged after 5 years of being built. So the service life of the substructure in the Florida Keys, the bridge was built in the 1980s or so, by 1986, they already needed major repair. So ACI 318 needs to cover this very aggressive environment. When we talk about carbonation, it is a very aggressive, but it's not as fast. So it is a slower process, but we're talking about 4-year recertification for buildings and this type of thing. We're looking at long-term durability. And so we have to make sure we're designing for early serviceability, but also long-term. We want our buildings to last longer, and especially our aging infrastructure is something we need to consider. So carbonation is something that we can't forget, even though most of the discussions and most of our codes and specs mostly pay attention to chlorine use corrosion.
Yeah, I understand at this moment, and I understand, but all I'm trying to find out if when you do some kind of a research and analysis, your baseline would be based on something. So I'm not sure. I wonder if you took ACI 318 requirement as the baseline and see how I'm just trying to figure out how you establish the baseline to be able to really then translate to there is a problem.
Well, we'll take another look at it to make sure that is taken into account.
Yeah, I think it'll be nice. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet.
All right. Now I'm going to ask for the motion to accept the interim draft report establishing inspection periods and preliminary recommendations for preventive measures for mid-rise buildings near coastal inland South Florida environments. By name, please.
Askunz, a motion to accept.
Vince, a second.
Sergio and Vince, respectively. Go ahead, Chairman Schock.
Thank you. The motion was made and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? That motion carries. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right. Let's move on to our next agenda item. Background noise going on. Could we figure that out? All right. So our final agenda item is to review and discuss research work plan for fiscal year 2023-24. And as you know, by reviewing documents, staff's recommending that the commission fund projects for the 2023 period that are primarily related to implementation of the 8th edition 2023 and development of the 9th edition, as well as our regular Cat 3 hurricane damage stuff. Mo's going to give us an overview of the work plan and the proposal. And at the conclusion, we're going to ask that you make a motion to recommend that the commission fund the projects as they were recommended by DBPR staff for this cycle, given that we're in a code update cycle and have certain documents that are required for implementation and development of our codes. Mo?
Yeah, good afternoon. This is Mo Madani. I think on the agenda, as you see, we have under item number 5, we have posted the work plan. However, we also attached to it a list of research projects that's needed, critically needed, for in support of the update, the 8th edition update to the Florida Building Code, the 2023, and also for the next update, which is the 9th edition, 2026, for the building code. We normally, when the code, when we have a new code, we try to do a number of things in support of that code. One of the, as you see, and one of the things we're trying to do for the 8th edition is with regard to the energy code, we are required by the Department of Energy to certify that Florida Energy Code meet or exceed the national energy standards. So we, as you see, we need to do a project to do qualitative assessments and analysis to mainly confirm that. That's one of the projects we will be doing. And those have to be done within this really physical year. Which is we're talking about 2023-2024. The other project that we need is really what we do is we try to show it through analysis the differences between the new code and the current code, and that really these analyses normally help in the training and individuals to see what are the significant changes in the code, etc. So that's another project we will be doing, and that's really for all the codes. We have 9 subcodes that this work will be done to, as we've done for the prior code. For the new code, for the next update, the 2026 update, as you see, there's a number of projects. One of them is mainly has to do with the energy code. We do mainly do a code comparison between the current, excuse me, the 8th edition, the current code, and the new national energy standard, whether it's the International Energy Conservation Code or ASHRAE 90.1 2022. And that's mainly to identify which energy code measure or requirement we need to really comply with in order to continue to show that our Florida energy code meet or exceed the national energy standards. So that's a project we need to be done also during the physical year 2023-24. The other project we do is the evaluation of the cost impact and benefit of the 2000, mainly we look at the 2024 ICO changes, especially the prescriptive, and try to really show the additional costs and their impact. So this project also will be part of those that's needed. Other project, we have ongoing project, which is the hurricane damage assessment project. That's really to mainly survey damage after a hurricane. That we do that every year. And as you see, also we have other small projects. Some of them is providing for fact sheets or explanation of certain issues in the code that's either introduced under the 2023 or something that really relate to a new standard. For example, during this code update, we are adopting ASCE 722. So we're trying to really, one of the work would be to show the significant changes from ASCE 722, and also try to explain certain things, such as there's a new requirement now with regard to tornado design. So that's we try to provide for fact sheets and illustration for designer and whoever really trying to figure out what are the new requirements and their impact. So that's really the list of research projects that's needed to support the code, whether the next edition or the edition after. Looking at the funds and what's really going to involve, for sure what we're trying to do here will maybe eat up all the research fund for this upcoming physical year. So for that, we ask you to really at this point, first of all, see if you have any questions, and we'll go from there. about what I was just said. Thank you.
So before we take questions, just so you know what's being asked, we'll get your questions and comments, and then we'd like to have a motion to recommend the commission fund the research project for fiscal year 23-24, as recommended by DBPR staff, as required for implementation of the 8th edition 2023, development of the 9th edition 2026, survey of buildings damaged by Category 3 hurricanes, the various fact sheets, best practices recommendations for roof edge details and corrosion resistance, and the impact of ASC 7-2022 tornado design requirements on buildings and floors. That's the motion we'll be asking for. Committee members, do you have any questions or comments regarding the research funding for the next fiscal year?
Ben Sayas here, I got a question. Are these already written up and sponsored, or are these like just tariffs that they've used cost estimates from the past? In other words, we're picking the subjects, allotting the money, and then one of the universities or somebody's going to pony up to volunteer to do it for that amount, or do we already have people that have said this is the estimate? Somebody just refresh my memory here.
Go ahead, Mo.
These projects are based on the prior engagement and knowing where, what are the costs and the people involved. So, yes, we have principal investigators and individuals who has an interest, and we used them before, and the cost is based on a prior engagement specific to this project.
Okay, perfect. And it totals up to about $400,000. So I take it this will absorb the entire budget for the studies going forward for next year then.
That's correct.
And this pretty much happens every code cycle. There's one of the years ends up like this because of what's really required to do this kind of important work. Okay, any other questions from committee members? All right, would you then make a motion by name to recommend the commission fund the research projects for fiscal year 23-24 as recommended by DBPAR staff as required for implementation of the 8th edition 2023, development of the 9th edition 2026, survey of buildings damaged by Cat 3 hurricanes, fact sheets, best practice recommendations, and the impact of AC 7-2022 tornado design requirements on buildings in Florida.
Vince, they have so motioned. I can't repeat all that, Jeff. Sorry.
All right. It's on the record. Is there a second?
Sheldon, second.
Very good. Commissioner Schock, would you call the motion, please?
Yeah, the motion has been made and seconded to recommend approval of the research project for 23-24 to the commission. Is any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? That motion carries. I'd also add, too, that I talked to Mo and Tom about this, I think, but if there's any legislation that requires us to do additional work, they will ask for additional funds to cover that work as well. So I just wanted to pass that along as well.
Great. That's good. Okay. In that case, is there anybody from the public who would wish to comment this time? All right, is there any committee member or staff member that wishes to comment?
Jeff, I'd like to make a comment, Vince Hayhouse here.
Sure, go ahead, Vince.
On the heels of everything that we're seeing this legislative cycle, get ready to see something along the lines of a uniform permit application coming from probably legislation mandating the commission go over it. I don't know if this committee would be involved in that, but we've also seen Senate Bill 154, House Bill 1395 for the milestone inspections. It's going to be pretty active, everybody, and guiding the legislation that's not full of, contractors or building code individuals. It falls on our shoulders to try and communicate and cut through or figure out the path forward. That said, be ready. It's not only a new code adoption year, but legislation. are going to have their own ideas of where we need to steer industry. So get ready to get busy is basically what I'm trying to get out there. And if anyone calls you regarding that, please try to give them as much information as you can and steer any legislators in the right direction so we could get to work, so to speak. Thanks, Jeff.
All right. Anybody else from our committee or staff? All right. Chairman Schock, I'll turn it to you to adjourn us, please.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for participating. It was a good meeting, a lot of good work done. I appreciate that effort. And if there's no further discussion from anyone, we stand adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.